Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up, Project Kangaroo loses its bounce. Is this the end of the road for the UK TV industry's on-demand dream? Also in the podcast, more doom in newspaper land with cuts at The Telegraph and at NewsQuest. Plus, no prospect for recovery with a gloomy forecast for the UK's ad spend next year. And
to a wizard, an unwanted erection can still come in pretty handy.
More outrage from the Daily Mail Brigade as John Barrowman gets his chops out on the radio. But does anyone really care this time? All this and much more coming up on Media Talk from The Guardian. This week, our sister network, Smooth Radio, announced that Ricky Gervais and Tom Jones will be spearheading their station's Christmas Day schedules. Now, we couldn't afford either of those two, but we do have the next best things. Making his debut in the pod is The Guardian's new head of media and technology, Steve Busfield. Who knows, Steve, if this all goes well, people may end up hurling their underwear at you.
I am the Tom Jones of media and technology.
Absolutely. And Jemima Kish is the Media Guardian's new media correspondent. Are you a Tom Jones fan, Jemima? No?
No, not at all. Not really. I hear moonlighting from the technology podcast.
You are
I
moonlighting.
Feel a traitor.
Yes, you are indeed. Okay, well, leather trousers and Welsh baritones at the ready. Let's have a sting.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on guardian.co.uk.
Now, the big story of this week concerns the future of Project Kangaroo. This is the online TV joint venture between ITV Channel 4 and BBC Worldwide. It now hangs in the balance after the Competition Commission said it would deter rivals in the UK video on demand market. Mark Sweeney is Media Guardian's advertising correspondent. He knows all about this story. Mark, can you start by explaining what Project Kangaroo is, or perhaps was?
Well, the plan was quite simple. It was to bring together a couple of the biggest UK broadcasters, make a one-stop shop for something like 10,000 hours of programming, be a mixture of catch-up TV, i.e. stuff you might have missed last night or in the last week, and a long tail of archive content of classic TV shows. Idea was tap into people who want to watch it on other platforms like computers, for example, ultimately get it onto TV platforms.
So it's like a bit like an iPlayer for the commercial TV industry, is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the BBC is involved in it.
It is, but not licence fee paying. BBC Worldwide, which doesn't have a commercial service, along with Channel 4 and ITV, which
right, okay.
did have catch-up services.
I see. So what was the Competition Commission's problem with it?
Well, the problem with it is really its size. On paper, it's a good idea. One-stop shop, you can get what you want anywhere, but the problem is they're massive. Each, and if you combine the programming from the three broadcasters, they can dominate. So other competitors were worried about if they wanted to license on-demand programs, there'd be a huge amount of muscle in one place and they could dominate pricing, have a right. selling cartel.
So who were the other competitors who are complaining about it? Who are they?
Well, the list is about as long as my arm. You
right.
could name everyone.
From, very long arm you've got.
From Pact, yep, and independent production companies, BSkyB, Virgin, BT Vision, they're queuing around the corner.
So what needs to happen next to make Project Kangaroo work, if it's going to work at all? I mean, what's your view about, you know, is it dead in the water?
It's not dead in the water, but analysts have termed what's likely to come out the other side as a very compromised or watered-down service, which poses a number of issues. It's been quite political since its outset. I mean, getting Channel 4, ITV and Worldwide in a room, they're used to picking each other apart as opposed to working together. They obviously lost the chief executive, Ashley Highfield, who was a BBC Future Media and Technology man a couple of months ago. But the issues they face from the competition Commission are massive. What they need to do is come up with an idea that will convince them that they're not going to be too dominant. The remedies that are there pick apart their whole business model. It could be to divorce offering catch-up TV directly. It could stop them selling on bulk. Or altogether, one option is to prohibit it.
Steve, from the consumer's point of view, though, this is a bit of a disaster, isn't it? Because it would have been quite good to have a one-stop shop, don't you think?
It would have been quite good to have a one-stop shop, but I think there were two main problems with the Kangaroo idea as a whole, which were that, one, the BBC had already got iPlayer, which is a fantastic right. success and works brilliantly well for them, and Worldwide, you know, would, I'm sure, rather have some way of piggybacking onto that.
But that's not allowed, is it?
No, not allowed. Yeah. But, you know, but there are ways and means, aren't there?
Yeah.
And secondly, I think the main problem has been ITV's involvement, because anything that is digital and has got ITV in it, it just, you know, just turns to custard.
But wasn't the principle that
I think
Kangaroo
the big problem was a crap name?
I quite like the name Kangaroo. wasn't the principle that it was BBC Worldwide content that would be involved in
right.
Kangaroo? So iPlayer would still be the stuff that's up to a week old,
yeah.
And Kangaroo would be anything else, so everything else. So it would be a more commercial proposition.
Right, okay. Well, there is kind of one glimmer of hope, isn't it? Because the Commission said that Kangaroo wouldn't substantially lessen competition for online advertising.
That they've sort of got around quite nicely. They were going to agree to sell around their own video ads, and then the white space, the other banners and bits and pieces on the service, would be sold by a joint sale house. So that was fine. But fundamentally, the BBC Worldwide, the content they were offering, Jemima's right, the catch-up was going to link away to the BBC for the first 7 days. But Worldwide was quite concerned about what it offered after that, and it wasn't going to be for another 180 days after this first 7 or 8 days that you'd be able to get streamed shows. You'd have to buy them. It's hugely unpopular. What we learnt from the early days of the iPlayer is that people prefer to watch stream content right now, not download it and then watch it.
This is your bailiwick, Jemima.
Well, I'm a slightly different tangent, but I think one of the problems here is that there are only three broadcasters. You know, where's Five and where's Sky? Why couldn't they make a cross-industry platform that everyone could be on, and then there wouldn't have been a problem, would there?
Well, on this very podcast before, Janine Gibson has argued that what the BBC should do is make the iPlayer open source.
Well, that's an even better solution, isn't it? Yeah. Because why reinvent the wheel? I've already done it. Well, yeah, they've done it several times. Yeah. This, the latest incarnation of the iPlayer is the best one. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Okay. What she said.
That's what they should do. Excellent. Thank you very much. What do you think? Is it the end for Kangaroo? Post your comments on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. I'm Matt Wells, and you are indeed listening to Media Talk. Still to come, we'll discuss the latest round of gross indecency at the BBC, and we've got something of our own to moan about, too. First, let's take a gander through some of the other stories from the media pages this week. Mark Sweeney is still here because your particular speciality is advertising, and you wrote a story this week saying that the media sector is going to fare pretty badly in 2009 compared to other developed countries.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It's a bit of a bloodbath overall.
Which is a technical term.
Yeah. Overall, the UK media spend is going to be down around 6%. Although I'd like to point out a slight glimmer of hope if you can shine anything on this. TV is going to be down about 6%, which is in line with the overall amount that the UK economy is going to be down. So maybe on a slightly better note, that means it's performing pretty well in its market. Further information inside the report, which came from Martin Sorrell's WPP, it did make some comments about TV becoming very, very cheap and therefore being a more affordable buy. So it is a negative six, but it's a negative six in a negative six market.
Yeah, I think I understand that.
To newspaper, you got what? National newspapers down 12, regional down 13, business press down 15 or so. That's really worrying.
Online still growing.
Yes, but you'll notice that double-digit growth is now sailed off into the sunset. It's about, 2, 3, 4%?
Online?
Online. It's 20-odd this year, so it's retracting down to a more normalised growth rate.
Is it still more than cinema and outdoor and radio?
Oh, yeah, it's still giant.
Well,
yeah.
It's clearly...
trying to big up the online sector in this corner.
And on the optimistic side, I was listening to the chief executive of Sky last night, who was saying, well, it's all right, because people won't be able to afford to go out, and they'll all sit at home watching
television,
their telly.
Yes. Exactly. There we are. Yeah. Are they going to be sitting at home watching them, reading their newspapers? That's what we want to know. Because you were saying, Mark, that ad spend in newspapers is going to be down particularly badly, and it's quite clear that all newspaper groups are feeling it really badly. And slightly ironic that the latest cut at the Daily Telegraph is the obituaries editor, Steve.
Yeah, along with 50 other people.
Right. Okay.
At an organisation that has been paring back quite substantially. They integrated and they've made it all try and make more sense there, and yet they're still cutting a lot of people, and the number of people at the Telegraph and the Mail who used to do freelance work and contract work, they've all been cut back to the bone as well.
And interesting that up in Scotland, NewsQuest, which owns the Herald and the Evening Times and maybe one or two other papers, not quite sure, they're going through a integration process as well that's going to lead all staff to have to reapply to for their jobs. So this is not something that's just happening in isolation, is it?
Absolutely, and a particularly brutal way of doing the integration and your cost cutting by making every single member of staff say it's going to be a completely new job, so you're going to have to reapply for it.
So how's it going to? So they've served redundancy notices. Am I right on the entire workforce? That's That's how it works. Yes. So you get a letter saying, sorry, you're redundant, and there's, you know, 350 people or something get that, and they all of those people have to reapply for something like 250, 275 new jobs. And so, well, I wouldn't like to be in the newspaper office of the Herald.
For the grace of God, go I.
Absolutely.
30 or 40 musical chairs short.
Oh, yes, not very good. Okay. Now, apparently, Jamie Oliver has launched an Oprah-style lifestyle mag. Will that be one that you'll be buying, Jemima, this week?
Launching magazines in this climate? Is he mad?
Now, who's the other? It's Peaches Geldof's launched a magazine as well.
Look, you're only saying this because everybody got invited to this fabulous celebrity party tonight.
I haven't been invited to this fabulous celebrity party tonight.
Have my invite because I'm not going. Okay. I'm going to a pub quiz in Latimer Road.
So is this Jamie's or Peaches?
Neither.
Peaches Geldof's magazine.
Her fabulous party.
Absolutely.
Yes. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Okay, no.
NFI.
Yeah. Didn't you get invited?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
All right.
You got the shirt for it.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much to Mark Sweeney of MediaGuardian.co.uk. Thanks very much for coming in. If you have any suggestions for alternative titles of Jamie Oliver's magazine, perhaps, do post them on the blog. And there are plenty more media stories at MediaGuardian.co.uk. Now then, I wonder what's on the wireless.
What are we going to do about Sarah Kennedy, Dudley? I mean, leaves us in the lurch, in the worst circumstances yesterday, when the whole building could have gone up in flames. Uh-huh. And then I offer her some Swedish broken biscuits, and she complains she didn't get any turkey. Honestly.
They wouldn't have kept. It wouldn't have kept.
No, and it was in no state to be offered to anybody after you'd hacked it to pieces. I'm never going to carve my turkey again.
Yes, the nation's favourite radio station finally advertised for a new controller this week. Now, we actually covered that subject pretty thoroughly last week, so let's instead deal with the latest hoo-ha at Broadcasting House. I have to put on my most enraged voice for this bit. You'll have read, hopefully like me, in the Daily Mail that serial gay and occasional actor, John Barrowman, exposed himself live on Radio 1.
Please don't recreate it.
Certainly not.
Okay.
Anyway, yes, he exposed himself, apparently, on Radio 1's weekend show, The Switch, presented by Annie Mack and Nick Grimshaw. BBC have removed the offending material from the iPlayer, so we couldn't download it and rip it off, unfortunately. But here's our own Crime Watch-style reconstruction.
You're famous for getting your willy out in interviews. Is this going to happen today? Should Annie be careful?
Is the webcam on? All right, cool. I'll get it out for you then. No problem. Oh, my God!
Well, it is panto season after all. It's quite good, I thought.
I know who those voices are as well. Oh, terrifying.
Well done to the audio team. Steve, is this a real story? Is it a real outrage story?
Well, it's not rocket science to say that, you know, that the Daily Mail likes a bit of moral outrage. I dealt in it for 2 years during my career as well. I mean, you know, my second splash at the Daily Mail was ban this car crash sex film, which was, you know, which was a bit. That David Cronenberg movie, and, you know, persuading Virginia Bottomley to say this is terrible, we should ban it, when nobody had seen it at the time. Shameful.
I bloody hate it. It's sanctimonious bloody preaching about a non-story, and I'm going to swear as much as I like, but this is the kind of mentality that puts the BBC into a very defensive, very unproductive fate. You know, everyone in the press office is just in bunker mentality, you know, and it's really difficult for them to talk about anything positive because they're always defensive now because of these ridiculous stories.
Well, the BBC Well, the Daily Mail thinks it's caught on to something, doesn't it, Steve? Because it thinks that it's... hang on a second, I'm trying to pursue a serious point here.
Sorry.
It thinks that it's tapped into a latent feeling in Middle Britain that things have, quote, gone too far. And so what they're doing now is they're picking up on every little thing, aren't they, and turning it into a great, huge thing with which to beat the BBC with.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Daily Mail's modus operandi is, you know, is to find things that they know people will be upset about and will make great causes. And, you know, and this, you know, this coming so soon after the Jonathan Ross Russell Brand thing, to have something that touches so many nerves. It's got the BBC, it's got Doctor Who, it's got you know, an actor who is, you know, who is openly gay. You know, these are all things that Middle England and people buy the Daily Mail for. And, you know, and annoyingly for people who work at The Guardian and for so much of the, you know, the liberal media, the fact is that they have, over recent years, touched a nerve with British culture. You know, their sales in a market where everybody else is struggling and everybody else is going down, the Daily Mail have done hugely successfully. So, you know, so the Daily Mail knows
that they're onto something. They know what they're onto something. Yeah.
And the problem for the BBC is that that bit of Britain is also probably the bit of Britain that most appreciates the BBC, that most cares about it. That is, you know, whilst they sit and complain about, you know, their licence fee being wasted, that's because they all pay it and they all care about it and they all watch it. It is a rich scene for the Daily Mail to mine. How many people would have seen the webcam that...
I thought they covered up the webcam.
No webcam. That was the point, wasn't
there
was it?
No, there was a webcam. I think
it was covered up.
Yes.
Radio... I'm just looking around to see if I can see a webcam in here. Radio 4...
There are no genitals on the show.
We're wearing our clothes.
Radio 4 received some complaints, apparently, about bestiality. I don't even know how to say it. Joke. Have you heard about this? It prompted the head of comedy at Radio 4, Mark Freeland, to say, and this is a real quote, "Bestiality is an acceptable subject of comedy at the corporation."
Can we hear the joke? Can we hear the joke? I think we need to be the judges of this.
I'm afraid I don't know what it was.
I thought even more impressive this week was the fact that the Daily Telegraph and Telegraph Online did a story about an incident of real-life bestiality, and to protect the horse's identity, they blacked out its eyes. They still named it in the piece, and, you know, and it was still
Winnie.
Clear whose horse it was.
I thought that was a hilarious story. Now, there was a serious point that our own listeners have been making. On this, on our blog. Curly Locks wrote, "I think the BBC are in danger of becoming this old, out-of-touch corporation if they go ahead with over-censorship. Many people who complain about bad language on TV are watching programmes that are not aimed at them. And if the BBC show adult comedy with the language cut out, many viewers and the people who make these shows will go to Channel 4." Absolutely. Now, on this subject of Daily Mailitis sweeping the country, Moz Giles wrote, "Paul Dacre is like your nan who still makes tea with 4 sugars and 3 tea bags and says stuff like, it wasn't like that in my day. Bless him and his right-wing reactionary ways, the jittering old fool. I like him, I does." That's what Moz Giles said. You know, you've worked for... that's not a very characteristic, you know, very good characterisation.
Well, who knows? Maybe the Independent moving them will have a calming effect on the Daily Mail.
Yes, we talked about this last week. What should Independent writers expect, Steve, when... because you've worked there at Daily Mail Towers when they arrive. Is it a quite a different kind of place from the wilds of Canary Wharf?
Well, I mean, it's an office that thinks it's run for the masters of the universe. It's sort of got this grand atrium and this huge escalator and thinks it's rather grand when it's a bit of a sweatshop. But everybody in there is, you know, is smartly dressed. Now, whether they will try and enforce a dress code upon their new tenants will be an interesting thought. I mean, you know, I'm not sure if it's still the case, but certainly until recently, all of the subs at the Daily Mail, even though nobody in the outside world saw them, had to wear a tie. But, you know, but despite the fact that that Mr. Dacre is, you know, is the moral guardian of the country, I think that some of his readers would be quite shocked to discover what his language is like when you actually get it anywhere near him.
But I do like the idea that you walk into this huge atrium and there's these huge sweeping escalators, presumably to take you to the moral high ground.
Yay!
Marvellous. Right, moving on. I have something of my own to be genuinely outraged about. Jemima and Steve, have a listen to this.
In the corner near the fake self-tan is an aftershave called Hunky Man. Upon its faux chrome lid is rust, its glass is dulled and thick with dust. No chin will ever feel the splash from this shameful waste of Christmas cash.
This Christmas, give something that might actually be loved. A DAB digital radio with lots of lovely BBC radio stations. Happy listening with the BBC. To check which stations are available in your area, go to bbc.co.uk/digitalradio. Also available on digital TV and online.
I'm so outraged. I spilt my coffee all over my script.
He has a sodden script.
But it's outrageous. That's an ad.
It's an ad
on the BBC.
I know what you're going to say.
But are you outraged as well?
Well, I wasn't outraged. I was mildly surprised, and I thought, oh, that's actually quite a good idea for a Christmas present. So I think it worked on me.
But doesn't somebody need to be pushing, you know, digital radio? They need to get...
Well, they can pay for ads on commercial networks. But, you know, it's not the job of the BBC to ask people, to say to people, why don't you go into the shops and buy a digital radio
set? I thought that was a bit strange.
It's perfectly fine for them to say, oh, here's all our lovely output that you can listen on digital radio. Well, I don't have a big problem with that. But they are promoting actual sets.
Yes, they wouldn't do the same thing with tellies, would they?
No.
Kind of, here's the latest HD TV.
It's an outrage.
And what did the BBC say about this?
They should probably have a little disclaimer at the bottom of it as well, you know, because I bought a digital radio for my mum for Christmas a couple of years ago. None of the channels work because she lives in one of those areas that's a bit of a black spot.
Planet Rock is also available, yes. Okay. Now, if you've...
no,
your mum probably wouldn't... Yes, no, she wouldn't be interested in that, would she? Okay, if you've got anything that you're outraged about, do leave us a comment at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk or go to the Facebook wall. So this would be the moment when Gareth McLean would come in, but he's not here, Jemima.
What, and his lovely moustache?
And there we were, weren't we, hobnobbing last night. We shouldn't say this on air, but we were hobnobbing with the stuff. Well, we were hobnobbing with the BBC press office. Hobnobbing with Jaina Bennett. She tried to be funny. Now, I don't know if anybody has ever heard Jaina Bennett talk. God love her. It takes quite a lot of editing, it has to be said. Humour doesn't come naturally. Pot kettle, says the producer. Humour not coming naturally to me either. Anyway,
it's really difficult. If it doesn't come naturally, yes. I'm not sure it should be scripted by someone else, because somebody else's jokes are just, you know, unless obviously they're written by John Plunkett.
I always read out producer Ben's jokes. They're much funnier than mine. Now, anyway, what I was going to say is normally this bit is where we get Gareth McLean in, but I haven't seen him since last night.
Oh,
so
God,
I don't know where
happened?
He is. So why don't we be Gareth McLean instead? So I'm going to ask you what you have watched on television this week.
Not going to take very long.
It's not going to take very long. Did you watch...
Jemima doesn't watch the television.
You
it's
must
far
watch
too
television,
old,
Steve.
I watch a lot of television.
Did you watch Wallander?
I've got it on the planner, not yet watched.
Right. Now, Wallander is very interesting because this is the new Swedish detective that the BBC is showing. And now it sounds terrible, you know, because it's... set in Sweden. It's not in Swedish, but it's with Kenneth Branagh, and he's one of those sort of people that you either kind of love or hate. But he's actually really, really, really good in it. It's quite languid, right? So you need a fair bit of time to sit and watch it, and there are long intervals where nothing much happens.
Isn't that like Scandinavia as a whole?
It is sort of like Scandinavia as a whole, yes, exactly. So I like that. What about Brittany on The X Factor?
She was shocking. She clearly hadn't watched any of the show. She clearly wasn't singing. She can clearly barely dance anymore.
But has she ever been able to do it? She never sung. I don't ever remember.
She's just a trained monkey.
Yeah.
You know.
Well,
and
slightly rude, perhaps. But
well, no, she is. I mean, you know, she was one of those sort of pink windmill kids, wasn't she? That, you know, went to stage school and was in the Mickey Mouse Club or whatever it was with Justin Trousersnake.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she's just got old and she can't do it anymore. I mean, just let her go. Pop stars aren't supposed to carry on forever.
And I don't think she ever really could sing. I think, you know, I think there was... When you listen to the X Factor singers singing her songs, you thought...
They're much
actually,
better.
But most of them were big production numbers and you realised, you know, just how much the backing singers were what made the original songs. And secondly, when they were a good singer and they were trying to sing a Britney song, they're having to limit themselves. I mean, Alexandra had to limit her voice in order to do a Britney song.
Well, you're raising
your
hand.
I did watch a little bit of telly.
No.
I've been trying to watch Heroes, which I think is the second series, and my boyfriend loves it. And I just don't understand what's going on. It's too complicated, and all the people that were good were bad. And then people
but
keep
all
switching
around.
And
it's
I just don't
confusing.
Understand.
I give up on Heroes. Did you? Yeah. Ever?
I never watched Heroes. I'm currently watching Underbelly on FX, which is a sort of...
this is your... FX is just your... Everything
FX
that you like is on
FX
that channel.
FX is my channel.
What is this FX you speak of?
it's a channel. Basically, they have the Wire and they have all the
things
that Steve...
I don't think I have that on my Virgin Media.
It's a bloke's channel hidden away. And actually, I was saying this to somebody from Sky last night. Actually, Sky One would be a lot better if the later part of Sky One's schedule
was FX. Well, FX, and they're owned by the same people, isn't it? Why don't they just put FX on Sky? And that's what they should do.
Is it a bit like Dave?
I like Top Gear.
I like Top Gear.
I don't Top Gear. And I'm watching Survivors, which...
If Gareth was here, he'd launch into a tirade about how... In fact, he did launch into a tirade to the BBC head of drama, Ben Stevenson, who cornered him at one point for writing rude things about BBC drama. But this is one of the things that he hates, but you like it.
Well, I loved it when I was a kid in the 70s, and I'm strangely pleased that they're remaking it, and I think they're doing not a bad job at it.
But isn't the problem that you sort of have no empathy for any of these characters? The world is supposed to be ending around them, and they're worried about their hair and makeup and who they should be shagging next. That's the problem with that.
It's probably a bit more realistic, isn't it?
Anyway, well, I think we're done now. We're done for another week. Thank you very much to Steve Busfield and Jemima Kish for their contributions and for keeping their clothes on. Thank you very much, guys.
Well, it was tough, but we've managed it.
if you want to give us your thoughts on any of the topics we've discussed, go to the Facebook group or do post a comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. The producer this week was Ben Green, as usual. I'm Matt Wells. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.